From brief, strong language to partial nudity, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. I'm Jason Burns, and some material in this podcast may be inappropriate for children under the age of 13.
That was good. I like that, Jason. I am Danny Nucci, and this is the What About podcast.
First movie to make it to theaters under the PG-13 banner, Red Dawn, released in 1984. A lot have come and gone since then. You've been in plenty of PG-13 movies. You have any favorites?
Wolverine!
We're not talking Marvel Wolverine either for the listeners.
No. That's Red one Dawn, of the lines baby. From Red Dawn. Mm-hmm. Red Dawn I loved as a kid. It was one I saw in the theater. I was crazy about it.
Did you go out for Red Dawn? Were you acting?
No, then? I was an actor then, but I think it was before they were all older than me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I loved Red Dawn. And I love Lea Thompson. I'm crazy about Lea Thompson. We did a movie together, which we talk about a little bit. I'm just a huge fan of her as a comedic actress, as a dramatic actress, as a director. Just awesome. And what a human being.
As a writer, somebody who fell in love with writing at an early age and went into a career as a writer, I think more than anything, Back to the Future was the reason why I got into writing. I just thought it was so smart and so well written over the course of those three films that I really would bank on that being why I do what I do to this, you know, to wow. this day. Yeah. Yep.
So wow. I wish you would have told her that. Without further ado, Lea Thompson.
I know Danny's sick of hearing it, but anybody who listens to the podcast knows that I am a super dog lover. Oh. So I did a little research on your Instagram, and please tell me about your little fellas.
But before you answer, just for the record, I was literally playing with 8 little puppies last night. So I got no issues.
Okay.
And I was at somebody's house, and I was literally just playing with all the, they were like literally like this big. They were delicious. They were little lab puppies. They were fantastic. So just for the record. Go on.
No, I love dogs. We've had a lot of dogs and we just got 2 puppies, but now they're 110 pounds and 98 pounds. So
as puppies.
Big puppies.
Wait a minute. Who walks them? You or Howie?
Howie's not here, so it's okay. It's me. I walk them. And they're scary to walk. They're really big. And we've always had dogs. I love dogs. And I have a dog sleeping. Yeah, we have always had dogs. We have horses, we have chickens. We have fish, and the dogs are obviously the hardest to deal with. But I also take care of my two grown daughters' dogs when they're gone. So that's
it's like added a full
excitement.
House of dogs. Yeah.
Yes.
Wait, when they're gone, where? Like, where they're like they live in Los Angeles, but when they go out to shoot or something or go on vacation, you're in charge of the dogs.
Yes. Yes.
God, that's a lot. That's a lot, Mom.
Yes.
That's a lot of responsibility, Mom.
I also have my mother-in-law living here, too.
Wow.
So, yeah. For 8 years. Wow. 8 years.
8 years. Wow.
But you don't have any feelings about that, right?
None. I'm happy as a clam.
I didn't think you did. So, I want to talk about where you grew up, because I didn't know this. I didn't know that you were from Minnesota. I had no idea. And that, I'm sorry, you must do it way better. Go ahead, please. Can we do the whole interview with a Minnesota accent?
Oh, yeah, it's so sexy. It's the sexiest Scott Stern accent ever. Oh, my God.
I love it. So you grew up in Minnesota. There was a lot of you, right? I didn't know that there was like not 912 kids. How many were there?
No, I was the youngest of 5. But my mom had 4 kids in 4 years, and 5 years she had 5 years later she had me. So it was it was an interesting position to be in.
Were you an accident?
Yes.
Do they come right out and say it?
Yeah.
Or was it like, no, we wanted to take a pause?
They do. When you're the youngest, they just tell you because you're kind of, you know, at that point.
They don't care anymore.
No, but at that point, they've already.
They realize you'll be okay. Yes. It doesn't matter.
We're going to be damaged anyway.
Yes, that's right. But they also understand that they've already gone through everything that they can imagine with the kids before you. So you're just kind of on your own, you know, at that point.
Yeah. It was a big family and we were very poor. So it was, you know, but it was easier to be poor then in a way because we had a house and everything.
Mm-hmm. Was it a creative home, Lea?
Very creative. It was how we got to explain away why we were poor. We were special, mm-hmm. and we were sure. artists, mm-hmm. so we should sure. be poor.
Special artists should be poor, right? Struggling artists, of course. Were mom and dad creative? Well, how were mom and dad creative?
My mom was really creative. She was everything. Like my daughter Maddie, she was a painter, a singer, a piano player, a director, an actress, a sculptor, a composer.
Wow.
Wait, this is Maddie or your mother?
Maddie is all those things, and so is my mother. Yeah, except for a sculptor.
But your mom was an actress back
yeah,
in the day?
Yeah, I was in her belly when she was doing a show called Oh Dad, Poor Dad, Mama's Hung You in the Closet, and I'm Feeling So Sad.
A theater? Like she was doing like theater in Minnesota?
Yeah, she was doing a play.
Oh, that's fantastic. So basically, it's in the bloodlines. Your yes. kids were doomed from the start. I mean, blessed from the start.
But then you and your brother got into dancing, which is something that your mother wasn't involved in.
Yes.
So you branched out. You stayed creative, but did something different.
Yeah, I did. I did the one thing she couldn't do. So I was a ballet dancer. And
brother had set precedent, right? He was older. Yes. He was doing it.
Yeah, everybody was in the Nutcracker at one point, even my mom and dad, except for me. So I had to get up. I had to claw my way onto that stage to get some attention.
But what people don't know, maybe they do know, is that you actually really pursued it. Like this was a thing. Like
yeah.
you were going, like you were a ballerina, like straight up.
Yeah.
And did your brother's success inspire you? The fact that he was doing it or were you just like, this is what I love?
Yeah, I did love it. And he loved it even more. He's actually been doing the Nutcracker with only one exception because of COVID for 60 wow. years, every year.
Just in case anybody missed that, that's 6-0, 60 years. That's amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, he really loves dance and he still does. And I loved it too. It never goes away. I mean, even like Shirley MacLaine says she's still a dancer in her brain. You know, it doesn't, it's kind of sticks with you. I was trying to do a visualization and I'm really weird. I can't see a visualization. Like if you guys close your eyes, can you see an apple?
Yeah.
Yeah. You can't do that?
I can't do that. There's no apple.
What's the matter with you?
I don't know.
I read that some people don't even have an inner voice in their head. Like they don't have discussions right. with themselves. It's just not there. I can't imagine that.
Well, they can have all of mine, just for the record. They're welcome. They can have any of the 112 people that are in here.
But the visualization, the only visualization I could come up with was like movement, like dancing. I could still like kind of imagine dancing, but I can't see anything. It's very upsetting.
So would you choreograph your own stuff, Leah?
Probably. Yeah, I've thought about that would be fun. Sometimes when I'm directing, I get to kind of do a little bit of choreography. And
a lot of it's choreography. We call it blocking. We call it blocking and camera movement, also known as choreography.
Yeah, but I mean, like I just did a Will Trent. I directed a Will Trent and it was a very special drag queen.
Oh, so you got to choreograph
that?
Well,
there was a choreographer, but I got to kind of work with it.
Collaborate. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. That's exciting. That's fun. I was going to ask you about that in a second. I'll get back to you and your Will Trent in a minute. But so you're doing ballet, what are the opportunities to move forward in ballet in Minnesota? Are they okay? Are they good?
Well, there was kind of one company that my brother was the star of. And so I wasn't doing so great in that. Or maybe I just needed to put a mountain range between me and home to grow up. I don't know. But I moved to Pennsylvania to be an apprentice in the Pennsylvania Ballet. And then I moved to New York to work on ABT2. And then I quit dancing because
How old were you when you moved to Pennsylvania?
17.
Isn't that nuts?
Yeah.
Isn't that nuts?
I know, with no money, nothing.
No money and a 17. Imagine your girls at 17, mm-hmm. like going to a completely different city.
Well, my daughter Madeline did. She went to New York, but she did stay with my aunt. She went to New York at 17.
Yeah, that's different. Did you stay with your aunt? No, you just went and you were like all on your own.
Yeah. Yeah.
Little Leah, all by her lonesome in Pennsylvania, learning how to, you know, ballet dance with a company and having to deal with mean girls and mean dancers and people that are competitive and it's awful. And you got thick skin and I love you. Go on, sorry.
An internship does not suggest you're having an income. How are you surviving in Pennsylvania?
I'm an excellent waitress. Really, really. I remember this one place I worked at, they had mice. So the real trick was to like go, look over there, you know, while the mouse ran.
Oh my God. What did you guys like huddle up before you open and go, listen, here's what we're going to do with the mice. Yeah. If you see a mouse, this is the game plan and break. Is that basically how it was? That's funny.
I feel like a lot of times if you're dining at a restaurant that has mice, you probably are okay with the fact that it has mice at that point. You know, it's
maybe you don't know, Jason. Maybe they're trying to.
I don't know. These sound like very outgoing mice if they're just running around.
Yeah.
So you moved to New York. What prompted the move to New York from Pennsylvania?
I just knew I wasn't going to move up in that company. And I wanted to, but I had this interesting moment after I decided to quit dancing, where I was like in a week, I was offered an off-Broadway show, The Trip Back Down. I was offered a job in the Ohio Ballet, and I got a call back to a musical on Broadway to dance and sing. And I had to.
So you'd been auditioning, you had an agent at this point? No. You got all the, no. How did that work? Well, great. So what, you just like showing up and people going, hi, I'm Leah. I can dance. I can sing and I can act. Help me out.
I don't remember how I got the musical. I know I auditioned for the play and the ballet company, but I had to make a decision and I took the play. And then, so that kind of, that 1 week made my whole course.
And then you became what is now part of my vernacular since 1998. Thank you very much, Leah Thompson. A schmactor?
Yes. A schmactologist as well.
A schmactor. Literally, that's where I got it. Like, people go, oh my God, so you're a schmactor. Like, what? I'm like, literally, I think like everybody says it. Like, an actor, I'm a schmactor. Yeah, that's where I got it. Leah Thompson. Oh, you're, you know, schmacting. I'm like, schmacting? She's like, yeah, schmacting. I'm like, oh, it's like a, you soften the acting. She's like, yeah, it's great.
It's kind of Yiddish for overacting, I think.
Sure. Schmacting.
Yeah.
Acting, schmacting.
So I had read, Leah, that you had gotten some criticism around that time and decided to stop dancing. Is that right? And was that something that was kind of devastating, or did you see it as a helpful piece of advice?
No, it's part of my bio for 100 million years that Baryshnikov told me that I was too stocky to be a dancer or to be in his company in ABT. American Ballet Theater, which is kind of the pinnacle of ballet or Balanchine, but I never was going to do that. But so I kind of got to the top, and at the top, someone pushed me off the ledge. And so,
not just someone.
Yeah, Baryshnikov. And
the most famous ballet dancer to all Americans.
Exactly. And so who is actually stocky? P.S. I'm not bitter.
You're stocky.
But it was obviously a really good thing. I
mean, you may be a lot of things. Stocky is not one of them, kid.
I know.
Go on. He should have. I don't understand.
He just should have said, I didn't really have the right body. You have to have a mutant's body to be a great ballet dancer. And I didn't have that. So I just had a normal Midwestern body. And so that's when I packed it up and decided to try a different
thing. So did it snowball? Did it start rolling? Did you just go one thing to another, to another, to another?
Once I started acting, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then what was it that put you on the map? Do you remember?
Well, my first job was Jaws 3D. Jaws was a huge...
Yeah, so you were
it
in.
It was a huge franchise. Sure. It was a big Universal movie.
Do you remember who directed that picture?
Joe Alves.
Okay.
And I played Kellyanne Bukowski.
Sure.
There's lots of fans of that movie. I know.
I don't doubt it for a second. I'm asking. I'm curious.
It was probably the first 3D movie I ever saw. I grew up in the 80s and it was, I remember you'd get like the glasses in like TV Guide or something like that when it came out on HBO.
Yeah. Yeah. It was an interesting beginning. But what was fun about that was that I got to do my own stunts, and they were like really scary stunts. I did a 3-tier water ski pyramid. You know, there's like 6 guys on the bottom, 2 girls standing on their shoulders, and then 2 girls on the top. Mm-hmm. And I had to do that. And
has you ever water skied? Well, you must have, because you grew up. No. all the lakes in Minnesota never water skied?
No, I wasn't rich. That's a rich people thing.
Sure. Of course.
But I didn't water ski, and it was really fun to have that to hold on to because I didn't know how to act. So it could be like, I'm a ballerina.
Did you ever actually, I mean, because, you know, people know you. You're obviously very talented and hilarious. Did you go to school at all? Or did you just pick it up? Did you ever end up going to acting, any kind of formal training?
I went to a couple of classes, but, you know, being a dancer, especially where I grew up in Minnesota, they were so brutal to us. I was in no mood to go through that again with people saying, trying to break me down. I was like, I'm broken. I don't need more of that. So I think it would have been fun to do a lot of acting classes, but I didn't. I did a few in New York, but no.
So you're basically self-taught.
Yeah.
Learned on the job.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what was the thing that made you, where was the first time that you actually had to like really act?
I don't.
You know what I mean? Really schmacked. Not like just say a few lines here and look cute.
I schmacked it in my second movie. I'm not sure the result, but it was this movie with Tom Cruise called All the Right Moves.
Well, in some cases, that was the first one. That was a serious, that was a big movie at that time.
Yeah.
He was a huge star. And not as big a star as he is now, but he was he was definitely like the up and coming guy.
Yeah.
At that time. Yeah. Yeah. So that was your first time you were like, okay, let's work the scenes. Let's work it out.
Well, you know, he had come from all doing The Outsiders and all of that. So he was really into it. I remember like it was freezing and he was doing a football game and he made me come to the set because he said my character would be in the stands. And I was like, it was midnight and it was raining. I had to sit in the stands. And also we had to go to high school so we could remember what going to high school was about. That was weird.
That is weird.
And he it was easy for him because he got busted really fast. Somebody recognized him. So the whole thing was
right. So he had to go. But yeah. You can stay.
Yeah, I can
You can
stay.
Still check out the high school.
I did see when I was looking at your dogs on Instagram that you still wear a coat that you were given from that film, right? That's awesome. And it looks amazing still.
Danny, I was so impressed that they gave me a coat. I was so poor. And they had a down coat. And it was my warmie.
Like a set coat?
Yeah.
I was going to say, it was your set coat?
It was my warmie coat. And I was like, what the heck is this? And they gave it to me. And I still have it. And I wore it this Christmas. It's still good coat.
Isn't that crazy? That's an old.
That's 42 years old.
That's an old coat. I mean, it's weird. We talk about these numbers and look at you. It doesn't make any fucking sense whatsoever. But so you do all the right moves, and they're like, oh, all right, the film does well, and they're like, oh, we got to get Leah for this, and we got to get Leah for that. Now, were you like walking into auditions going, Miss Thompson, nice to meet you. did it shift? Because I remember when I did it, there was one thing where literally I did this thing. And then after that, for, you know, however long it lasts, you know, these things, it was like I would walk in like, oh, thank you so much. I'm like,
I know.
Who are you talking to? Like, when did you become so nice? Like, wait a minute. Where's the stand there? Was it after All the Right Moves that start to happen where, you know, you would walk into a room and they'd be like, oh, thank you. Oh, thank you.
I don't remember that. Blah, blah, blah. And frankly, I think it happened all so fast for me. I never expected to live in California. I never expected to be a movie star. I never expected to have any money. I never expected to have that kind of attention. So it happened so quickly. It was actually kind of traumatic. I felt like, I didn't know what I was doing. And so it was all like, you know,
was your big secret? I don't know what I'm doing.
Like everybody. But, you know, just the publicity. You know how publicity is? Being on
of course, yeah.
on the Today Show and the the Tonight Show. Ugh.
And back then, Leah, there were three networks and a film would come out and it was the only film. It was a big deal. People's attention wasn't everywhere. So it was on the things that were coming out at any given moment.
Yeah, it was a lot. It was a lot to process. And I'm just realizing how hard it must have been on me at the time. And because very, very quickly I did Red Dawn and then I did Back to the Future. And that was insane. And then I did I did all these movies, Some Kind of Wonderful. I did them all in a row.
Some Kind of Wonderful. And what happened on that film, Leah?
I met my husband. He cast.
What happened on that movie? Yeah.
Bow chicka bow wow.
Now, oh.
Actually, it's really sad. I mean, he cast me as the perfect girl, and then we started dating. So that's, you know, it wouldn't go over big in this you know, it's not politically
correct. Thank God for the 80s.
Yeah. But here's what's so amazing, Leah, is that it's one of the things that I complain about so much about today's entertainment landscape is that you just listed off these great movies that you were in, and they were all original ideas.
Yeah.
And we don't see those. I mean, to me, Back to the Future was a life game changer for me. I fight with my friends all the time that it was the best trilogy, Star Wars be damned. And we're not getting those anymore because we're not getting original ideas anymore.
Not often, but I did see a really great movie, I thought, which was Civil War. Did you see that movie?
Oh, yeah, I hear it's great. No, not yet.
It's like when I got out of that movie, I was like, I haven't seen a movie in 10 years. Like,
yeah.
Felt like.
It starts to feel like that.
It felt like a real movie to me. And it's an original idea, and it's pertinent, and it's artistic, and it's a great movie. But yeah, I know the original idea thing is amazing. I mean, they made Fall Guy as a feature right now.
Yes, that's
right. I'm sure it's going to be great.
I'm sure it's fine. Listen, they're trying to figure out what will work.
Yeah.
They're looking for a guarantee, of course. So you're a huge star. You're on Back to the Future, and then you do Howard the Duck.
Oh, right. I forgot. I left that one out.
Oh, I didn't leave that one out because it's one of those things where if Howard the Duck had become a sensation, you know, who knows what would have happened? Who knows what would have happened? It would have just been, you know, it's just seconds and inches in terms of Hollywood. And that's the way that it kind of works. Not that you know. I mean, we should all have our own sitcom for a number of years.
Especially in comparison to where we are now, where comic book movies were reigned at the movie theaters for 10, 15 years.
Yeah, it was the first.
But back then it was not normal.
It was the first Marvel movie, apparently. And so everything kind of said that I should do this movie. And then I could tell it wasn't working very well, but it has a huge cult following now. Like, people love that movie.
Yeah,
I'm sure people did still love it. But let's talk about your seminal performance in The Unknown Cyclist.
I know.
One of your favorite co-stars.
You know what, Danny?
First of all, go ahead.
I was just driving from San Francisco to LA by myself and along the coast there. And I was really thinking about you and that movie and how much fun it was to make that movie.
Oh, God, we had so much fun. So we did this film, this really small independent film called The Unknown Cyclist in 1998. And it was one of my favorite experiences with Leah, which is, you know, it was a very collaborative experience. And so, or you could say unprepared, depends on how you look at it, but it was very collaborative experience. And so there was this one huge scene that Leah had, and, you know, it just wasn't written really well. So they let us go, okay, well, you guys take a shot at it. And so Leah and I are sitting in there and we're like rewriting this. We're about to go shoot it. So they're like waiting for us to do it. And I wrote a little piece of dialogue, and she wrote some dialogue. We put the scene together. We're like, yeah, this might really work. And then I sat back. I wasn't in the scene. I sat back, and I watched Leah do one of my lines that I'd written, like my dialogue that I'd come up with. And it was one of the greatest moments I've ever had. And it made me want to write ever since then, where you're just like, oh, my God, that's what happens? This is what it looks like? It's remarkable. What a treat. I was like, that literally hooked me to writing ever since. I remember how we came up out of nothing, and then it became this beautiful dialogue out of your mouth, which was gorgeous.
Oh,
gorgeous. Oh, it's true. That's true. And you were wonderful in the film. But let's talk about directing for a second.
Okay.
Because now you're a well-established director, and now you're competing with your husband doing different episodes of Will Trent. Well, is that funny? Like, oh, these are Howie's episodes. These are Leah's episodes. You know, that's very funny. So, but before we get into, I mean, obviously you started out, I think, if I'm correct, you started out directing a TV movie.
Yeah. Right? I started directing. I had done a bunch of TV movies for Hallmark Channel, and they let me direct. And so that was like 17 years ago I started directing. But those were like full movies. So that was a cool way to start. and I got to shoot on film and everything like that. So I really love directing. I love directing. It's so exciting.
And talk about how the Year of Spectacular Men came about, because it's a family affair. I mean, I want to know, because I'm just going to crush you on this experience. You're directing, for people that don't know, your husband produced it with you and your daughters, and they're both starring in it. You're in it, and you directed it. And action.
It was even weirder than that, because my oldest daughter, Maddie, wrote it about, it was semi-autobiographical, even though she uh-huh. made me a lesbian and killed off my husband. But other than that, it was semi-autobiographical.
Sure.
And she was...
That's the semi part, right?
Yes. She was just always sure. a great writer, and she was like, oh, it's been a year of spectacular men. They're all awful. And Zoe and I, my other daughter, were like, that's a movie. You should write that right now. Mm. And so she did. She wrote it, and we somehow scraped together the money, and we made this movie. And then Maddie also, she did the score. She wrote 5 songs for it, and she sang the songs.
Wow.
Overachieving. And we also shot it over a period of a whole year, because it was the Year of Spectacular Men. So we had to shoot pieces in the snow, in the spring, in New York, in Lake Tahoe, and San Francisco, and LA. So I had
Who boarded this film?
I don't know. It was crazy.
Who boarded and scheduled this film?
And we had
there's the real hero of this film.
I know. We had like Nick Braun and Cameron Monaghan, and we had to put them 6 months apart in different scenes. So they were really great, all the actors. And it was a great experience, and I really love the movie. And you can still find it somewhere. So check out the Year of
Spectacular. Can you, and just in terms of one of the things that I noticed that I did not know was you've done something that a lot of people don't do. Directors don't do. You did 4 camera. And you did single camera.
Thank you. Yeah.
That's so, I mean, it's very uncommon. I don't know if by 4 camera, I mean sitcom, a situation live before a studio audience. And I mean, obviously you were quite familiar with the medium. You had your own show, Caroline in the City. So what was that like when you walked on and go, okay, and you got to direct the funny, which is, you know, you had Allison Janney, but you got to direct the funny, which to me is just like, it's just your wheelhouse. I mean, just, you know, being able to like direct the funny is just like, that's your deal.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. And Allison Janney was nominated for an Academy Award the week I was there doing Mom. So that was spectacular and fun. But yeah, I've been really lucky. I've done so many different styles. I mean, I did Star Trek Picard, which is like a massive
machine. What was that tone meaning? Like, so this is how Star Trek goes here. This is what we do here. And you're like, I'm familiar with the show.
I cried. I loved Star Trek when I was a little girl. You know, I just loved it. It shaped my whole thing. So when I did 2 Star Trek Picards, and when they laid in my directed by Leah Thompson, it was always at the theme. Da, 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 da. Tears.
I was going to say, what? I mean, it's one of those moments where you go, no one in Minnesota would believe this. No one in the 70s in Minnesota would believe this is actually possible.
You're not too stocky to direct Picard, I'll tell you that. Take that, Baryshnikov. I can't even say it.
Baryshnikov, that's it.
Hey, Baryshnikov, how you doing? What about PG-13?
You mentioned Red Dawn. Red Dawn was the first PG-13 movie to make it to theaters. I believe The Flamingo Kid was the first to get it, but Red Dawn beat it to theaters. Do you recall at the time, especially going out and having to publicize the movie, having to explain what it was? And did you feel like, oh man, I'm in this movie and they're experimenting with something? And do you recall what it was like to find out that you were in the first movie that was PG-13?
I just remember thinking, this is so violent. I thought it was going to be an R, like all the right moves. Mm. So I thought it was kind of interesting that they came up with something new. and in perfect American fashion, like All the Right Moves got an R because I showed my boobs and because I said the F word. And there was a big deal. They were okay with me showing my boobs. They were okay with me doing the deed on screen,
sure,
but not okay with me saying the word.
Saying it.
I mean, right. It's all so crazy in America. And then Red Dawn, it was at the time the most violent movie ever made. Like, someone gets killed within the first 3 minutes, and so for that to be like,
and a high school too. I remember that scene. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
So I remember thinking that was absurd even then. Like, I was like, wow, there's so much blood. It's so violent.
Which kind of makes sense given that it's John Milius. Well, you got to give me some John Milius stories. I mean, please give me one John Milius story.
He called me Beast Woman for some reason because I had that big hair.
Yeah.
But the audition went like this. Arnold Schwarzenegger was sitting in his office and they were both smoking cigars.
As they do.
At MGM at the time, on the Sony lot. And I walked in. I guess I was already came with a pedigree already because I was a hot actress. And he said, I've got to ask you 3 questions. And I go, okay. He goes, have you shot a gun? Can you ride a horse? Have you ever eaten squirrel?
Have you ever eaten squirrel?
Now guess which one of these I had actually done.
Eaten squirrel?
Yes.
That's amazing. You've never shot a gun or ridden a horse?
No, but I said
of course. Who doesn't? Every actor knows how to ride. Please.
Yes, I can water ski a pyramid.
Exactly.
Are you comfortable with horses, Danny? Oh yeah, no, I'm very comfortable with horses.
Yes. Yes. So I got the job, but that was one of my John Milius things.
So was there a squirrel involved in shooting?
No.
No. Okay. Just
trying to jog your memory whether Leah actually eats a squirrel and whether John Milius goes, listen, I want this to be real. That. Let's eat a real squirrel.
They had to cut it out to not get the R rating. No.
Which is cool. I mean, the thing that it was a violent movie, you know, I was reading about how PG-13 came to be, and part of it was that the violence of Gremlins was one of the things that prompted them to change it. Because when you think about it, it's a pretty violent movie. I mean, what happens to the gremlins and the humans off screen?
The poor still, old lady on the staircase, they send her through the window.
Yeah, and the other one was Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. They thought was a little too, they wanted to give it an R. So Spielberg, he might have had some influence at the time, decided that, I'm just saying he might have had some influence.
Just a little.
But it's crazy to think about now, because, or even, you know, last 20 years, is every studio wants to try to appeal to everybody, and PG-13 is the go-to rating, right?
That's true.
Well, I think there's room in PG-13 now, because, you know, think about it. 13-year-olds, if we're going to say, you know, 13 and up, there's nothing they're going to see in a PG-13 they haven't seen on the internet.
Yeah.
And that's just just the reality.
On TV. I mean, things are not rated on network TV like like PG-13, but you can see everything on network TV now. You watch FX, you can see all kinds of things.
They moved Will Trent that I directed to 8 o'clock, which used to be like the family hour, but it's not, you know, it's pretty risque what happens on that show. So yeah, it's all up for grabs now.
The film went on to make, I think, $38 million on like a budget of about 17. Do you think the PG-13 rating helped it, or do you think having the R would have had more people at that time in the 80s interested? 84, I think it came out.
I have no idea. I was knee deep in terror at that moment.
Okay, but wait, you mentioned that before. I'm not going to let it go because I want to know, like, do you remember that experience? Do you remember, like, talking? I mean, did you have an agent, a manager, a lawyer? Who were you discussing this with? Family members? Where were you? Where were you? You know, who was your sounding board at this time?
Well, I was engaged to Dennis Quaid. So it was kind of like he had a movie coming out every weekend and I had a movie coming out every weekend. And we were like here and there and there and there and there, you know. So he was the one that like helped me navigate, you know, as well as I could. What, you know, he helped me get it, the team together, the business manager and the agent.
That's nice. So you had somebody helping you.
Yeah.
But when you go home at the end of the day, I mean, you're in your own head, it's got to be overwhelming, right? I mean, you start to worry who is coming at you for their own reasons and who is actually going to help you and not hurt you.
Yeah. I think it's just a matter of like I mean, and I feel really bad for actors now with you know, social media and everything, but it's just psychically a lot to take in if you're not like ready for it. I think that's one of the reasons why there's a lot of actors that are right now that are children of famous actors. I think it's not just because they kind of look like them. I think it's because they know how to handle it, like emotionally, because they've seen their parents do it, you know?
Speaking from experience, are we?
Yeah. Yes.
Right? Isn't that a trip, though? I mean, like, your kids are schmactors. Isn't that nuts?
Yeah, it is. I'm very proud.
It's just hard to believe. I'm thinking, but think about, you know, the climate when you were their age. Very different.
Yeah.
Very different. It's so much better now. I mean, I have a daughter who's an actor, and it's just a trip seeing it happen.
You mean the climate behind the scenes or the climate in general?
All of it. All of it. The entire thing, it's just a different climate. It just in terms of how one goes about moving forward in your career, and also the, you know, the political climate. This is all pre-Me Too, you know? Mm-hmm. It's just different.
Yeah, it is different. And then there's more parts. There's better parts for women. There's more women directors. There were no women directors. Like, I couldn't imagine, like, my daughter Zoe has produced 5 movies, really produced them, 5 movies, and she's 29. And I couldn't have imagined that. You know, I couldn't even imagine being a producer and director when I was.
Could you have gone to the network during Caroline in the City and said, I want to direct an episode?
If it would have gone another year, I would have directed it. But I had little tiny kids. But yes, they would have let me do it because they would have had to.
Yeah, that kind of worked out, huh? You got kids and you're doing a sitcom, which is basically like working hours, like regular working hours.
It was great. But that's a lot of pressure. You've done a sitcom. It's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, but I'm not as funny as you.
Yes, you are.
No, I'm not. My wife is hilarious. She's like a sitcom, you know, genius. Because there's very few of you that can actually, that have that thing. It's a thing. It's just a thing. It's like stand-up comedians. You either have a thing or you don't have a thing. And if you have the thing, it just comes easy to you. You can ride the wave of the laughter. You're able to figure out where the timing is all intuitively. And you have it. She has it. Now, and I know I don't have it in the same way. I mean, I'm funny, but I'm not like, I don't have that thing. Like the Matthew Perry thing, the Jason Bateman thing. It's a thing.
Mm-hmm. I bet you have that from your dancing, Leah, right? The rhythm of dancing and the rhythm of comedy.
Maybe. But yeah, that was a whole other thing. Because, you know, hitting the joke or the setup and how mad the writers get if you mess up either one is like, it's very, it's a whole thing. Comedy is much harder. We know that, right, Dan?
Yeah, it's because it's especially single camera comedy, because you're not getting the immediate, the immediate laughter, and you can't really count on the crew. They'll laugh the first time, but the second time may be even funnier, and they're like, hey, we heard this joke. You know, so it's like, you know, you can't really count on them in that sense. Or you got one writer in the back that's laughing at everything, which is always fun.
But the thing about a sitcom that I did like was that if I knew a joke wasn't funny, but the writers were like, this is funny. And I'd just be like, I don't think it's going to work, but I'll give it my shot. And you get it in front of the audience and the audience is like, and you're like, I was right.
Vindicated. Well, you were also, you know, I say either the gal or the guy. You were the gal on that show. So you had a voice. You could go, I like this. I don't like this. This would be cool. This would not be cool. It's a little different when you're, you know, just a guest.
Yeah. No, it's very hard. But I always find that the better the writer is, the more
collaborative, right? That's my experience.
Yeah.
Or at least open. Mm-hmm. Maybe not collaborative, may not be maybe too strong or open to hearing different ideas. So before we let you go, we got a listener question.
Mm-hmm.
And this is Leah Lover in Louisiana asked this question, which is not easy to say, especially if you're drunk. Leah Lover in Louisiana. Other than Back to the Future, what project do fans most want to talk with you about? And which one do you wish they talked about more? Let me know if you want that again.
Yeah, no, I got that. It's probably Howard the Duck. There's so many fans for Howard the Duck. And sometimes I attribute this to this weird thing of being, for a very small time, you could own your movie in a VCR, right? And you could stick it, you know, it was yours. And I know that the Howard the Duck videos were really cheap. So everybody had them that they would watch.
Well,
them.
And I can also say as a latchkey kid in the 80s, it was also on HBO all the time. So if you turned on the TV, it was on. You're like, well, I'm going to watch it.
They got a cheap deal on HBO, so they played it all the time. And so people just like love that movie. So they asked me about that. And I guess I wish they'd asked me more about The Year of Spectacular Man, because I'm the movie I directed with my daughters, because it didn't really get a great release. It was a bad time. And I love that movie. It's so special.
Yeah, people, if you're, I mean, just watch the trailer on YouTube. It will get you pregnant. I mean, you're ready. You're going to want to see this film. It's a lovely trailer. I've not seen the movie, I'm embarrassed to say, but I will now.
Get a kick out.
Is it rated PG-13?
Probably, exactly.
Good. Connection, synergy. There you go. I love it.
Exactly. You brought it all the way around.
I want to talk to her more about The Year of Spectacular Men, because, I mean, can you imagine you're the mom and you're directing your daughters and you're directing your daughter's dialogue and the script that she wrote? There's like, interpretation issues. I mean, I was like, oh my God, what was that like? Or maybe it was just completely symbiotic.
And her husband and her daughter's father is also the producer of the film as well, right?
Yes.
So there's a whole thing.
And the director.
And the director.
And the director. Like, you got to sit back and just go, I'm just letting it. Can you imagine?
No.
Imagine Kate directing and you got to sit back and let Kate direct and not say anything and let her do it the way that she wants to do it and trust that her vision is going to come through.
Well, I'm a control freak, so that was...
That's what I'm saying. That's why, is it not come through? Yeah, I guess come through. Vision's going to come through. Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, can you imagine that? That's a lot of inner work there.
I wish we had a chance to talk a little bit more about PG-13 movies, but as we're having the conversation, I realize, there's not a lot to talk about. We talk a little bit about it, but then we just went back into more about her life and career because it was so much more interesting than PG-13 movies.
Yeah, than PG-13 movies. I mean, we talked a little bit about the history and how they came to be and who was responsible, and we didn't talk about the Hays Code, but that's okay. People can research
it. Again, good point. Excellent point. Research, people.
Yeah, in your spare time. Thank you for listening.
Music by Denny Nucci. Produced and edited by the same two people you heard hosting this show, because they have no friends.